Okay, gentlemen, let's see where we got up to yesterday. We're here on Daf Gimel Omed Aleph. And the last thing we wrote was Ella. The Gemara concludes this whole long discussion about R. That R means Lila. So it's midway through the large section of the Gemara. And the first word in the line is Alma. Let me know if you have it. He says, Elevain Rav Huna, Ubein Rav Yehuda Kuli Alma, Ar Urtahu. We had enough proofs to establish that R is Lila. Velopli. So both Rav Huna, that's Iker Chiddush, and Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, who said Nagi, is Marki Asre. Umarki Asre. Each one reflected the local custom, his local custom regarding the word for Lila. The Asri the Rav Huna Kari in Rav Huna's Gegin, where he lived, they use a term for Lila which is called Nagi. Ubi Asri the Rav Yehuda Kari Lila. So we understand that in Rabbi Yehuda's area, the custom was to call Lila, Lila. I mean, R is the word for Lila. So that we understand. But Rav Huna used the word Nagi. Nagi literally means light. And he's referring to Lila. So the question that we're asking, in a sense, is really a question that perhaps in a slightly different form we could ask this question on the Mishnah itself. Meaning the Mishnah wants to use the word R. And yet it's very confusing to us because the word R means literally light. We don't associate nighttime with light. So the Mishnah is deliberately ambiguous. So we can basically answer two questions with one answer. Why, question number one, why in Rav Huna's area do they call Lila Yom, or light, and why does the Mishnah use the word R, which means light, to refer to Lila? Everything seems counterintuitive. So the Gemara asks this question, V'tana didan my time alok tani lele, why be ambiguous and use the word R? So the Gemara answers, Lishna ma'al Yehuda nakat. The Mishnah is trying to tell you and teach you that if you have a choice of two words, choose the word that's more subtle and it's a more pure way of speaking. You know, speech, I don't have to tell you, is the most powerful instrument or weapon that a human being is endowed with. And he can use it in many different ways. So we're going to have a whole sugya now that's going to last up until Daf Dalet about speech. And the first principle in speech that the Gemara presents is called Lishna Ma'alia. Lishna Ma'alya means use a language that's more sophisticated, a little more fine, a fine way of speaking. You know, sometimes you meet a person and you can learn so much by the way he formulates words and sentences. You know, if he does it in a way that's sensitive, he's a sensitive person. In Hebrew, we use the word tzach. Lashon tzach, tzariches. Tzach means a certain kind of purity or or a lack, you know, the absence of any impurities. That's called sach. It's a lishna ma'aliyah. And Lila, according to our Mishnah, is not the best language that you could use, the best word that you could choose for expressing nighttime. There's a more lishna ma'aliyah, a lashon sach. Again, we're not saying chas v'shalom that Lila is a lashon meguna. You know, there's nothing negative or despicable about the word Lila, but there's a word for Lila that's more ma'aliyah, that has a certain element of purity to it, and that's the word ar. I think I mentioned to you when we started, which was about a week ago, I don't remember when we started this Masech, bless you, that the Baal Amar says that the advantage of the word R here is not just Nish Lishna Ma'aliyah. If it was just Lishna Ma'aliyah, maybe the Mishnah would have been willing to decide to forego the Lishna Ma'aliyah for the sake of absolute clarity. And there should be no ambiguity about when you should do the Bdika. But there's a halachic advantage to use the word R. Do you remember this Baal Amar that I told you about? That you should start your Bdika when it's still light out. And now the Gemara quotes from Yeshua ben Levi. Now again, it's a little bit of a problem for me because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is not talking about avoiding the word Lila. In fact, I don't know that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would even insist that we avoid the word Lila. Don't use the word Lila, that's taboo. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is not talking about Lishna Ma'aliyah, he's talking about avoiding what's called Lashon Meguna, something that's negative, that's fair. I remember as a child, in the language that my friends and I would speak, we were used to using the word stink. Is that a word that makes in Britain also stink? And my father used to get very angry at me whenever I said something stinks. He felt that was a Lashon Meguna. I'll never forget this. Like, to me, it's stinky, you know, so what's so terrible about that? But he couldn't tolerate it. He should not use a word that is negative, that is, it has an element of corruption to it. You know, it's somewhat corrupted. It's impure.
He also uses the word, it's a nice good word to use, coarse.
Dover Maguna, he says coarse. You know what I think Otzko is trying to achieve here? I think he's trying to bridge the gap between what I call Lishna Ma'aliyah and avoiding Lila and Dover Maguna. So instead of calling Dover Maguna something that's impure or corrupt, he calls it coarse. Now coarse doesn't mean that it's corrupt. It doesn't mean it has impurities in it. Coarse means it's not adin, it's not sensitive.
Like your father said.
So that becomes closer to avoiding Lila, meaning Lila is a little bit coarse. Again, you and I would probably never think that the word Lila is coarse. I mean, the word Lila appears throughout the Torah. But nevertheless, there's something even better than that. And that's R. Okay, now how does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi prove this? Now there are two ways of saying that something is not kosher in the Torah's language. The normal way, the way that we would have said it, is to call it tame, an animal that's tame, which has nothing to do with the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, but it has to do with the laws of what you're allowed to eat when you're not allowed to eat. An animal that you're not allowed to eat is called a behemah tameh. However, the Torah, in the parasha of Kashrus, and also in the parasha of Noach, when Noach goes into the Teva and he takes from two different categories of animals, the Torah deliberately avoids the use of the word tame, or in the case of behemah, which is the keva, behemah tmeah. And that's called akam. Akam means to lengthen. Akam akosu, the Torah adds extra, in this case not words, but letters. Shmona osios, 8 letters. And why extra 8 letters? You know, the Torah doesn't add extra, there's nothing superficial in the Torah. Kidei, I added that word, shalola hotzi dover maguna mipiv. Not to use a language that entails mentioning impurities. So if you could say that it lacks purity, it's better to say that it lacks purity than to say that it's impure. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, min ha-behema. Okay, this is in Noach. It says, min ha-behema ha-tahora u-min ha-behema asher einena tahora. So look at that, asher einena tahora. So if you take the word hatmea, so hatmea has 5 letters to it, and einena tahora has 13 letters. You can count that up and tell me if I'm right. So there's an extra 8 letters here. To avoid tmeya, it says einena tahora. And this is coming to teach us that a person should try as best as he can to use a word, choose a word that's naki, that's completely clean of any sort of mention of something that's polluted or contaminated or impure. Rav Papa Amar, he said to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, you know what? The Torah even went as far as Teisha Osios, Iken, meaning 9 letters. Shenemar, here's in the Parsha of a Balkeri. This is at the end of the Chumash in Dvarim, in Parshas Ki Teitzei, I think. It says, Ki yeh b'cha ish, asher lo yeh tar mikrei laila. It doesn't say that as a result of mikrei laila, he's tamei. It could have said ish tamei, but it says ish, asher lo yeh tar. So if you take the word tamei, which has only 3 letters, and instead it says asher lo yeh tar, then you calculate that there's an extra superfluous 9 letters, but just to avoid the word tamei.
Mikra Lila also was probably a euphemism for something that would be less, that could be less letters.
Like what?
Well, what is Mikra Lila? You tell me.
Mikra Lila is in English. I think it's called a nocturnal emission. Okay, is so there such a phrase?
How do you
in
say
English?
It in Hebrew? It's a much shorter word.
I'm not sure what word you have in mind. I'm not enough of a bucky in the Hebrew language to answer that question.
Something relating to Zera, something, you know.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. It's a good point.
Why is the word Lila even used here? Here we have the word Lila being used in this passage. We're trying to avoid coarse language.
Right.
Why don't we say or in this case?
Right. So again, you know, we're not going to avoid Lila for the sake of clarity. The Mishnah will do that only according to the Baal Mark, because it has also another advantage. But the Torah will use the word Lila. I think I made that clear at the outset. The Torah doesn't avoid the word Lila. The Rabbanan wanted to add something by using the word R, not just to avoid a Dover Maguna, because again, I don't think Lila is a Dover Maguna, but to teach you about trying to find a Lishna Ma'aliyah, but only if that Lishna Ma'aliyah does not forfeit clarity. We're not going to be willing to forfeit clarity. We may forfeit a little clarity, if you will, in the exchange to get something that's not a Dover Maguna, to avoid a Dover Maguna. That maybe, perhaps, we would even go as far as to use a language that's unclear. But to avoid something like Lila, which is not a Dover Maguna, for the sake of Lishna Ma'aliyah, if it would forfeit, if it would jeopardize the clarity, I don't think the Mishnah would have done that. Okay. So that we have here, I just wanted to look and see. Oh. Interesting. There are many places in the Torah where the Torah itself uses the word tmeya. Here it says einenu tahora. And there are even places where the Torah talks about a person who's tamei. And here it says, asher lo yeh tar. So the answer is that the Torah made a change in one place, right, in the case of behemah, asher lo tahoro, in another place, in the case of ish, asher lo yeh tar. And that's meant to teach us a lesson, even though elsewhere the Torah might use that word lila or tamei. Are you with me? So it means that sometimes the Torah just made that change in order to convey this message. Ravina Omar Eser, even an extra 10 letters. Why? Because the word Tahar can be written in 2 ways. sometimes the word Torah is what's called chaser, and sometimes it's called mole. So you'll find in the Torah the word Torah without a vav and with a vav. Here it says asher lo tar, asher lo yatar, with a vav. So if you add the vav as an extra letter, which again, Rapapa didn't think it was an extra letter because the word Torah is generally written mole, but since the Torah could have gotten away with a chaser, the extra vav is to teach us that we can jack it up even to eser, even 10 extra letters will be justified for the sake of teaching us this lesson of Al Yotzi Adam Dovim Magunim Ipi. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Amar Sheshesre.
Is this playing one up?
I don't think so. I think it's a real serious halachic question about how far you're allowed to go and how many letters you're allowed to add in order to avoid a Dovim Magunim. And it would be an afkemina between the various shitas. So if we take this very seriously, I don't know if I'll be able to find this in the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch, I don't know. But I might just find in the Shulchan Aruch a general rule that says Lo Yotzi Adam Dov Maguna Mipiv. Maybe we'll find such a Shulchan Aruch. I don't know that it exists, but maybe we'll find it. But I don't think it's going to go into details about how many letters you're going to add. But it seems from this Gemara that if we were codifying this, we'd really have to write this in great detail. How many letters are we going to add in order to avoid a Dara Maguna?
How do we know that there's a limit?
Because otherwise, why is the Gemara bothered counting letters? That's how I'm just wondering. You know.
Except
so, right? So where did we get Sheshes Rei? Okay, now we're going to Shaul HaMelech. This is in Shmuel Aleph. And you remember that David HaMelech didn't show up for that Rosh Chodesh party. And Shaul was wondering where he is or where he was. Probably because he wanted to have him done under, you know. So it says the following, that Shaul HaMelech made a declaration. Well, I'm not sure actually if somebody could open up. I don't think it was Shaul who said this.
It says, "Alo diber Shaul ma'uma b'yom ha'u."
Which says, starting again, mention with
"Alo diber Shaul."
The low with a lot of aleph.
No, aleph. It was the first day. It was a two-day Rosh Chodesh. On the first day, he didn't say anything. On the second day, he already commented. So this is commenting on the first day.
First day, why he wasn't. "Alo
diber Shaul ma'uma b'yom ha'u ki omar mekrehu b'ti tahoru ki tahor."
So again, let's go over this again. David HaMelech was absent on Sudas Rosh Chodesh twice, on the first day of Rosh Chodesh and on the second day of Rosh Chodesh. So it was a Chodesh Chaser going into a Chodesh Mole. So there were 2 days Rosh Chodesh. And Ki Omar, again, I don't know if Ki Omar means he said it out loud or he said it to himself, that when he was absent, when David was absent on the first day, Mikrahu, this is a fluke, in other words, it wasn't that David HaMelech was deliberately absent as an act of rebellion, but rather, Mikrehu Bilti Tarhu Ki Lo Tar. Notice he could have said Mikre Tamehu, that the word Mikre is crucial here, because Mikre means as opposed to a deliberate action, it was only a Mikre, there was something happened beyond David's control, that's called Mikre. But instead of saying Bilti tar hu kilotar, which again, if you calculate the letters, I don't know how many there are, but it's going to be 16 plus tamehu. Meaning he could have said that he was tameh, and that's why he couldn't show up. Okay. There's a whole long discussion here about the extra vav in the word tar here, but somehow this calculation of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov to 16. If anyone has the time to do this, I don't have the time because I'm very eager to get to Daf Dalit, which is Maset Pesachim. But it seems that he doesn't calculate the extra vav, which according to Ravina should be calculated. Tanya Debe Rabbi Shmuel, Olam Yisaper Adam Meloshen Nekiyah. Okay, now we're going earlier than Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi said to avoid a Dover Maguna, but earlier, in a brisa of Rabbi Ishmael, we already have a formulation that although it doesn't say al yotzi, we're not talking about a violation of any sort, because we're not talking about a davar maguna, but we're talking about a positive cue of enhancing your speech by trying as best as you can to utilize a lashon nekiyah. And that's really what we saw in our Mishnah called the Lishnah Ma'aliyah. Now, I can't answer the following question, so don't ask me, but if you have an answer, please tell me. It seems that there are two Lishonos here in the Gemara that are very similar, and I can't tell you what the difference is. One is called the Lishnah Ma'aliyah, and the other called is a Lishnah Nikiyah, meaning the avoidance of Laila. That means I'm looking for not to avoid Laila, but I'm looking to enhance my language by looking for a more subtle way of saying Laila without indicating that it's the darkness of the night. In a sort of euphemistic way, I call it R. That's already a darga of Lishna Ma'aliyah. Then is something called a Lishna Nikiyah. And here, I think the word li'olam in Tanit Bei Rabbi Shmuel indicates that it's a mandate. Again, we're not saying that there's an avera here if he doesn't fulfill this, but it's a mandate that he should fulfill this. So Lashon Nekiyah is something that we really have to seek and find. In the case of Lishna Ma'aliyah, that's already another madrega, you know, for someone who really wants to be very, very careful and use the sweetest language that he possibly can, he should use Lishna Ma'aliyah. Rabbi Shmuel is going a little bit further. He's saying, li'olam, li'olam. He's giving you a mandate. Li'olam, he's not just saying, you know, li'olam yisapra adam lishna ma'aliyah. I don't know if he would go that far. You know, I don't know if at every moment, for every human being on the face of the earth, we have to advocate to being careful about a lishna ma'aliyah. Lishna ma'aliyah, I think, is like a mahajan min a mahajan. But to avoid something that would not be considered a lush in the kia, although again it wouldn't be a losaseh, it wouldn't be a negative like Rabbi Shmuel Levi says aliyotzi adam. That's already a davar maguna. The avoidance of Rabbi Shmuel is not to avoid a davar maguna, but to avoid something that's lacking in the kius.
Isn't the difference between aliyah and noki that Laila
to'or
is an
aliyah,
right,
and Tamei Titar
is
not? Well, no. Tamei Titar in the Gemara's language is a davar maguna, am I right? Because take a look at Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Li'olam al yotzi adam davar maguna mipiv. Because the Torah didn't want to use the word Tamei. So it seems that the word Tamei is a davar maguna. The flip side of Lashon Nekiyah is going to be something a little less negative than a Lashon Maguna. And a Tameh means that you're dealing with Tumah. Let's see the example of Rabbi. So again, just so I both said, the structure that I'm trying to suggest here is a threefold structure. Number one, the highest level is called Lashon Mi'aliyah. The next level would be what we call Lashon Nekiyah. Okay, that's for everybody. Li'olam. We should all be looking for a Lashon Nekiyah. And then there's the third level, which is to avoid Davar Maguna. And that's prohibited. We have to do everything that we can to avoid a Davar Maguna. That's on the lowest rung.
But the Torah uses, like you said, how can that be? Because the Torah uses Tomei the whole time. How can Torah
correct,
Torah
that's what I'm saying, a Maguna? That even avoiding a Davar Maguna has its limitations. And the limitation is, let's say, the number 16 letters. Okay, then? So again, what we find here is the following, that both Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Tana de Bei Yishmael open up with the word li'olam. So obviously they're mandating something, and it's not just a shooting for the stars kind of thing, you know, an embellishment. Li'olam means this is the way you have to do it. However, I think that in the case of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, since he's trying to tell you to avoid a davar maguna, he uses the phrase al yotzi. Al means avoid it. Again, is it at all costs? I wouldn't say it's at all costs, because in some cases, you know, we're going to use the you know, for the sake of brevity, and especially in terms of biblical Hebrew in the Bible itself, we're going to use a short form. But the al-yotzi, I think, indicates that, and also the word maguna sounds like it's really negative. Here Rabbi Shmuel, although he's saying li'olam, he doesn't say al-yotzi adam davar she'eino naki mipiv. Eino naki is not as catastrophic, it's not as negative as davar maguna. It doesn't have that clang. But on the other hand, if we want to use our speech properly, we should try to use a Lashon Nekiyah. Okay, let's see what a Lashon Nekiyah is all about. Sharei. Okay, now we're talking about the parsha of what's called Moshav HaZov. Okay, a Zov or a Zova who had three consecutive re'ios of Ziva on three consecutive days is Metame B'Tumas Moshav. Tumas Moshav means that if, let's say, a Zav will ride or sit on a carriage, the carriage becomes Tomei. Now it's interesting that the Torah could have used the word Moshav or could have used the word Merkav. And the Torah makes a distinction between a Zav and a Zova. A male, the Torah calls this Tumas Merkav, riding. So if you're riding a horse, if you're riding a carriage, then there's a transfer of Tuma, which is called Tumas Zav. In the case of an Isha, there in the case of a Zova, the Torah switches the word Merkav and instead uses the word Moshav. And the reason for this is because Rechiva conjures up the image of what's called Pisuk Raglayim, meaning separating the legs. So we're talking about a man, that's not called an absence of Nekiyus if you're talking about his riding. But if you're talking about a woman, because a woman that conjures up a certain image, again, back in the day, I don't know, I guess Chazal did not encourage women to ride horses. Today, women ride horses. Many of our women love horseback riding. I'm not going to speak in any personal, present company excluded. But in any event, the concept of Pisuk Raglayim is something that's lacking in the cues. Again, there's nothing wrong with the word Merkav, even as far as in Isha. We're going to soon see that Gemara is going to quote cases where the Torah itself uses the word Merkav. But even when the Torah uses the word Merkav, it's because of a specific reason that the Torah used Merkav with regard to a woman. But generally speaking, the Torah, if all things are equal, will avoid usage of the word Merkav with regard to an Isha. V'Omer, and he quotes a pasuk. Now this pasuk is in Tanakh. Until now we've been quoting a pasuk in Chumash. Now he's jumping up to Iyov. And what happens in Iyov? It says the following. And this is what the Bei Rabbi Shmuel is trying to derive from the pasuk in Iyov, that Li'olam Yisapra the Meloshin Nekiyah. The pasuk says V'Tivchar Lashon Arumim, that you should choose Lashon Arumim. Now what is Lashon Arumim? So if you take a look at Rashi says in Iyov that Lashon Arumim is a Lashon Chachamim. So the word Arumim sometimes has a negative connotation, but sometimes the word Arma means diplomacy, or it means a wise way of doing things, right? And, for example, you could talk about Shimon Velevi, you could talk about Esther. I mean, you'll find the Lashon Arumim as a chachma, using the life's, street knowledge, so to speak, to know diplomacy, how to get to your, achieve your goal. So the word Arumim here means chachamim. So it means that Tivchar Lashon Arumim, that the chachamim have their own Lashon, they have their own language. And Rabbi Shmuel understands that what's unique about the language of Chachamim, Lashon Chachamim, Lashon Arumim, they speak a Lashon Nekiyah. Now he quotes another pasuk, also in Iyov. And the pasuk says, V'das Sfasai Borur Milelo. That you should choose your words, that whatever comes out of your mouth, out of your lips, it should be thought out, it should be Borur. Borur means to clarify or to choose livrar. My V'Omer, so the Gemara immediately asks on this braisa, why does Rabbi Shmuel feel compelled to add a second pasuk? Why not suffice with the first pasuk? So the Gemara answers, V'chi tema, if you'll say that the first pasuk is not ample, It's not reliable. Why? Because Hani Mili Bidoraisa, when the Pasuk says that an Isha has, just 1 second. I think let me suggest the following. You'll tell me in your books if you have the same that I'm about to suggest. I don't have it here. But I think the Gemara is asking my vi omer, meaning why does the Beit Rabbi Shmuel have to stretch his arm out to Eov when he could have derived it from the Torah itself. The Torah itself avoids the word Merkav with regard to his Zavon. Instead it uses it, the word Moshav. Let's see if the Gemara is going to bear me out on this. B'chitema, maybe you'll argue against the first pasuk, meaning that the Torah replaced the word Merkav with Moshav in the case of a Zavah, Hanimilu Bidoraisa. The Torah itself has to use a Lashon Nekiyah, but that's only because the Torah is a divine work, and this is the speech of God. So God reaches a higher level. That doesn't necessarily set the standards for us, for our Talmidei Chachamim. I will be the Rabbanan Lo. Maybe the Talmidei Chachamim don't have to be careful about this, and they could use the word, for example, Merkav, even referring to a Zava, Toshma, the Omer. I have a pasuk, V'Tivchar Loshen Arumim, that even the Chachamim have to be careful about choosing their language. Oh, now the Gemara is asking my question. So one pasuk should be sufficient. Why does he need two psukim in Tanakh? We understand the pasuk in Chumash might set standards that apply to Mipia Gvura when Hashem is speaking. That doesn't teach anything about us Chachamim when we're learning Torah. But now you've proven that from the first pasuk with Tivcha Loshen Arumim. So why do you need a second pasuk of Das Fasai Bar Milelo? So the Gemara says the following: V'chi Taimen. If you'll say, if you only had the first pasuk, Hani Mili B'Drabbanan. In other words, when they're Rabbanan are learning Torah, right? That's why we call them Chachamim, because they're involved in the study of Torah. When you're on a whole, you know, you're involved in such a holy pursuit of studying Torah, then you have to be very careful and choose a language that's totally knocking. Avol b'mili di alma, maybe when I'm speaking to you about mundane matters and we're not learning Torah, lo, the omer, therefore we have the second pasuk of da sfasai bara milelo. And the sfasai means anything that comes out of my mouth, even if it's mili di alma. So we now have three different limudim, and each one has to be mashlim, has to complete the other one. If we only had the first limud, and the derivation about the Torah's use of the word Merkav, or in this case Moshav as opposed to Merkav, that wouldn't have told us anything about how we should learn Torah. Then we have the second pasuk that addresses the Chacham v'tivcha Loshen Arum to tell us that when we learn Torah, we have to use and carefully choose our language, avoid anything that's not a Loshen Nekiyah. And finally, we get to the third level, that what about Mili D'Alma, when I'm speaking about daily matters? Here too, the requirement is that we be very careful. Baru means to choose our language carefully. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, are you telling me that we have to avoid the word Merkav with regard to a woman who be Ishal Oksiv Le Merkav? Oksiv, it says in the parasha regarding Eliezer and Rivka, it says they vatoka Rivka v'narosev v'terkavna ala gmalin. So you see that the word terkavna is used by the Torah itself with regard to women, that the women are riding the camels. So the Gemara answers that there's a special reason that mitigates. In other words, it's not always going to be choose the cleanest language and the most pure language that you have. There are other factors and considerations. And here, the consideration is that we want to clarify something. And the clarity here is about the way you ride. So there are two ways of riding an animal. You know, you could ride an animal and feel very comfortable and not be, you know, not have to grab the reins and tighten your legs around the animal. And then certain animals are very precarious, and it's a very scary kind of thing. So I don't know, have you gentlemen ever gotten onto a camel?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
If you go down towards Yam HaMelech, right, Yehuda will hopefully back me up on this, although I don't see him. But anyway, so Yehuda lives on the way down to Yam HaMelech, and you'll see that the Arabs will take you on camels, right? They take you out for a camel ride. Now, I'm not advocating that you go there, but there are plenty of places in Israel where you can get a camel ride. Now, when you get onto a camel, it's a very, very tall animal, and it's quite scary. I once rode an elephant. Have you ever ridden on an elephant?
No.
Yeah. So they wouldn't let me ride the elephant by myself. I wonder why. And it had to be a driver. You know, the driver knew exactly, you know, he and the elephant are old friends, so he knew how to do it. But the higher you go up, the more scary it is. That's called in the Lashon of the Gemara, Bi'usa, or Bi'susa. Bi'susa means fright. In this case, fright of heights. So the Gemara wants to tell you, the Torah itself uses a language that's appropriate for someone who's holding on to an animal for dear life, you know, with his hands, with the reins, with his feet, with his anything that he can use, because when you're up there on top of a camel, you have to be very careful. I'm a little confused about this, by the way. I'll tell you why. But you don't have to. It's Vedok Vetishkach. Forget what I'm going to tell you. But I don't know why anyone would have to be scared about these camels. Who own these camels?
Yeah.
No, these are Avraham Avinu's camels. Now, the Ramban says about Avraham Avinu's camels that they were greater than the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yoyer, the donkey of Pinchas Ben Yoyer. Now, Pinchas Ben Yoyer had a donkey who would not eat from Dmai in the Gemara Chulin HaDafav. And the Ramban, in his commentary on this parasha that we're learning now, which is Bereishis Perek Chav Dalet, the Ramban says that the camels of Avraham Avinu were even on a greater madrega than the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yoyer. I would have loved to get a ride on the camels of Avraham Avinu. You know, there's no fear on the camels of Avraham Avinu.
There was fear of height.
No, there's no fear whatsoever on the camels of Avraham Avinu. No fear whatsoever. I would love to climb onto the camels of Avraham Avinu. You have to read the Ramban. The Ramban says the camels of Avraham Avinu would never eat from anyone else's pasture. They would never do anything that had even the slightest bit of danger involved in it, whether it's halachic danger, whether it's physical danger. Okay, don't fatishka. Osher, we're good friends. You can forget what I said. You want to say you're afraid of height. The Gemara supports you. I have a problem with the Ramban. The Ramban says that these were metaphysical camels. They were. If you've ever seen a camel, camels do one thing, and one thing only. They eat. That's all they do is eat. Watch the camels. You know, you put straw out, and 24/7 they're eating. You know? And the Ramban says that the camels of Avraham Avinu would not eat. They would eat when it was appropriate to eat. They would not eat when it was inappropriate to eat. And the Ramban has the holiness of the camels of Avraham Avinu was even greater than the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yor, who wouldn't even eat from Dmai, Rabosai. An Ani is allowed to eat from Dmai, but the Chamor of Pinchas Ben Yor didn't eat from Dmai. So the Gemara now asks the question, is this really true that the Torah will only use the word rechiva with regard to a woman if it's very high up, like on a camel, where there's bisusa? Vaksiv, what about the pasuk in Shmos? It says, Vayikach Moshe es ishto ves bonov ve'arkivem ala chamor. Now before we turn to the Daf Gimel Amid Beis, I already can guess the answer to the Gemara. I may be wrong. But what my guess would be, it says Ishto, and then what does it say? V'es Bono. So maybe if you're talking about a group of people that includes both male and female, then you could use the word Harkova. Let's see if I'm right. I hope so. If not, maybe the Gemara is a better. Oh, I think the Gemara says it. Hasam, says the Gemara Daf Gimel Amid Beis, Mishum Bono. The children of Moshe are male, are boys, is Urchi, who therefore we can use the word Rechiva to incorporate both the males and his wife, the female. So Gemara says, is that really true? Vaksiv, in the case of Abigail, who goes out to receive David HaMelech at night, after she was by Novel, it says the following, Vehi Rocheves al Hamar. And here's Rechiva, there's no fear of height. You know, Chamor is a low animal, so to speak. Hasa Mishubi Susa Delela. There, she was holding on for dear life with her legs tied around the animal, you know, just to hold on for life because of the fear of night. Because, you know, at night it's very dangerous. Urchahu. So therefore, it's Derech Eretz to use the word Rechiva even with regard to a woman. So Abigail is Rocheves al Hamor. The boy same. I'll give you another answer. Mishubi Susa Delela Leka. In other words, we don't have to worry about nighttime. That's not what she was worried about. But rather, Mishubi Susa de David, that David HaMelech was the king, Ika. And here she was coming back from Novel, so she was in a state of fear, and therefore she was nervous, and she was holding on to the Chamor for dear life. Iboy said a third answer, even if you'll say Misusa de David Namileka, that's not enough to justify the word Rocheves, but Mishum be Susa de Har Iker, that a Chamor goes up a mountain, and that's very dangerous when you go up a mountain. The Gemara asked him, Raisa Milok Siv Tame, you just finished telling me that when you have to use, or shall we say avoid a Dabar Maguna, then you don't use the word Tame, you say Asher Lo Tar, the Torah itself uses the word Tame. So how could it be that the use of the avoidance of the word Tomei is because it's Lashon Maguna? The Torah doesn't avoid the word Tomei. Elo, but rather called Hecha Dechi Hadadi Ninhu. If you have a choice and you don't have to add any extra words or any extra letters, all things are equal, then Mishtoi means to speak, but Lashon Nekia, you should avoid any sort of Lashon Maguna. But hecha, kol hecha, the nefisha mili, when there are extra words, and the nikia, the lashon nikia has more words, then mishtoi b'lashon kitzara, then the Torah will be in a balancing situation. And there's a conflict here, a tug of war. On the one hand, we would like to use lashon nikia, and if all things were equal, there was no other mitigating factor, we would certainly choose a lashon nekia. The Torah would say Ashalot Tar, even though it adds words. But there's another element here, and a new principle which the Gemara is establishing. The Gemara is going to spend a lot of time on this principle, that a person, when he's teaching Torah, he should always use a lashon ketzara. He should use a short, abridged language. So the Torah is going to do the following. The Torah is generally going to use the word Tomei for the sake of Tfos Lashon Ketzara, even though it's a Lashon Maguna, but Ketzara trumps Maguna. However, the Torah in one occasion, or possibly two occasions, will avoid the word Tomei and give us a Lashon Arucha instead of a Lashon Ketzara in order to avoid a Lashon Maguna, just to impress upon us that we should be very careful when we choose our language, that we should try to avoid a Lashon Maguna. Now, what's unclear about this Gemara is, you know, the Gemara just established that Lashon Nekiah is relevant even for Mili D'Alma, even when I speak to you about the weather. So now the question is there a halach of Lashon Ketzara with regard to talking about the weather? Do I have to actually be very careful when I talk? I understand that I have to avoid a Lashon Maguna, and that the Gemara derived from the Pasuk in Iyov. Vidas fas I borrow milelo. I have to choose my words carefully, even if I'm talking about the weather. But I don't know if this principle of Lashon Ketzara kicks in when I'm talking about the weather. It could be that Lashon Ketzara is halach in Mesiras HaTorah. The Mesiras HaTorah, the transmission of Torah, requires Lashon Ketzara, and therefore the Torah will forego the Lashon Nekiah of Asher Lo Tar, and generally the Torah will use the word Tomei, even though there's an element of Maguna in the word Tomei, but nevertheless for the sake of Lashon Ketzara. I don't know that Lashon Ketzara has anything to do with speaking about the weather. And my proof, again, you could always argue with me, is take a look at the next Gemara. The Gemara says, Kida Amar Avuna Marab, I'm going to prove to you that there is such a principle, and this has to weigh in to decide what word you should use, called Lashon Ketzara. Others say it was Rav Hun in the name of Rav, who said it in the name of Rav Meir. We olam yeshana odol l'talmido derech ketzara. Now notice the language here. It says a person should teach his student with an abridged, short language. It doesn't say, like we saw before, Li'olam yisaper onam. It doesn't say li'olam yisaper onam aloshim kitzora, which would imply even mili di'alma. But rather, it says li'olam yishana onam le'talmido aloshim kitzora. Now, I have to tell you, Rabosai, just on a very personal level, if you don't mind, a very personal comment. My Rebbe could not be described under this language of li'olam yishana adam le'talmido derech ktsar. He would repeat himself time and time again. And sometimes the shiur would go on for hours. But I have to tell you this. Every time he said it over, it was a little bit different than the first time he said it. He would change his language, he would clarify a little bit. So when the Gemara says Lashon Katsara, what the Gemara I think means is that again, if all things are equal and there's no sacrifice to clarity, then try and try as you can to speak B'Lashon Katsara. What you can say in three words, say in three words. And people, this is so contemporary because people don't have patience. You know, who has patience today? You know, give me the three-word answer, you know. And if you're going to keep going and going, I lose my focus. So it's much easier to use the right words that capture the meaning. But if, on the other hand, the short language will not convey the message and there'll be some lack of clarity, then drop the ball on Derech Tzara. The main purpose of teaching Torah is understanding Torah. Phil?
So I understand that in terms of conversation explanation, but don't we also learn elsewhere that the Torah doesn't have any extra letters and that every letter is necessary, word is necessary?
That's Lashon Katsara. Why? Because every word
is
Kolel HaNekudah. It gets to the point. You know, in other words, there's no need to add extra words, extra letters. If the Torah added extra words, extra letters, it repeated itself, it's not super, it has a purpose, and that's what the drush is.
Notwithstanding,
in the case of a person who's teaching Torah, he should try as much as he can to imitate the Torah and use the shortest language, but not at the expense of clarity. And therefore, when a Rebbe feels that he has to teach his Talmidim and repeat himself and make sure that he hocks it around, you know, that the Talmud is it's penetrating into the Talmud's mind and there's absolute clarity and comprehension, then don't even consider Derech Katsara. Don't even have it on your radar screen. That's I'm just telling you that this Gemara is a little bit misleading. If you take it at a superficial level, you might come to a mistaken conclusion that Li'olam, as it says here, Li'olam means if you could say it in five words, don't say it in 10 words. Now that's true, and the Gemara certainly advocates that, but only if there's no loss of clarity. So the Gemara asks the following question: V'chol hecha dechi adadi ninu mishtoi b'loshen kavod? Are you telling me that if there are no issues about adding extra letters and violating the Lashon Katsara requirement, then if all things are equal, we should go with the Lashon Kavod? And again, I don't think the Gemara is questioning this principle. This principle is obvious. But the Gemara is questioning, what do we do with the Pasuk? And the Pasuk says, V'arocheves v'yosheves t'chi adadi ninu uka'amar rocheves. So let's go back to the Pasuk in Avigail. It says over there, V'hi rocheves ala chamor. Why use the word rocheves? Why not use the word Yosheves? Yosheves is certainly more of a Lashon Nekiyah. You know, as you justify it by saying that, you know, there's an element of Biusa, and therefore we can, you know, we're not, you know, no one's conjuring up images in their mind about the woman's piece of Gedai Raglayim. But nevertheless, if you compare the language of Yosheves to the language of Rocheves, it would seem that there's no push to use the word Rocheves. It doesn't really clarify anything, so therefore, since Yosheves is a more Lashon Kavod, a Lashon Nekiyah, therefore the Torah should have preferred the word Yosheves to the word Rocheves. And the Gemara answers that Enochinami, there's an element here of Lashon Katsara, of using less letters by using the word Rocheves. Why? Because if you take a look at the word Rocheves, let's see if I can find it here in the Torah R. You know, the Torah R lists the psukim. Ah, interesting. In Shmuel Aleph Perek Chaf Hey, it says, V'hoya hi rocheves resh chaf beis tov. It's written chaser, not mol. Without a vav. Excellent. So the Gemara says that here we're going to tip the scale. And again, as long as it's not a Lashon She'ein Nekiyah, you know, but here it's not a Lashon She'ein Nekiyah because she's riding a chamar up a mountain and so forth and so on. And therefore we can justify, again, if all things were equal and we wouldn't save a letter, then we would certainly have preferred Yosheves over Rocheves. But here Rocheves ksiv chasav vav without a vav. So there's only four letters in the word Rocheves, and the word Yosheves there are five letters. So therefore, for the sake of brevity of reducing the number of letters, we're going to take a Lashon that's a little bit less Nekiyah, less Kavadik than the word Yosheves.
And we can read it right without the Vav.
Right, so we're saying now that since you can read it correctly without the Vav, so you have two advantages of Rocheves over Yosheves. Number one, it indicates a certain B, Susa, right, that she certainly was afraid when she got on this chamar. And number two, you also reduce the number of letters because you subtract the vav. Hani trei talmidi. Here the Gemara tells a story about two students. Naviyasvei kami de Rav. They were sitting in front of their Rebbe Rav. Chada Omar. One of them said, Shavisinin, Shavisinon, Hai Shmaitita. Okay, we were studying a certain shmaitita, a certain sugya. Kidovar acher misnikan. Now, dovar acher is a euphemism for a pig. You know, even in today's language, some people have, you know, in modern Hebrew they try the word avoid the word chazir, and misnikan means a tired out pig. You know, pigs sometimes look very lazy. So I don't know if pigs are tired or they profess to be tired or whatever it is. Now that's not a very nice way of saying it. V'chad omar, and others say shavasinin ha'ishmaitita kigdi misankutan. Instead of referring to a chazir, he referred to a gdi, to a goat. And a goat is obviously a kosher animal compared to a chazir. Chazir is not only a non-kosher animal, but it's almost a symbolism of tumah. V'loish toy Rav b'hadi dehech. And Rav didn't want to respond to the first Talmud because he felt he was using a language that was not a language Nekiyah. By comparing them to a sleepy pig, He was using a language that one shouldn't have used. The other one, the second Talmud, was using a more adin language, a more sensitive language. And he compared himself to, and the students to a tired goat. Now he quotes the Aruch here in a footnote. Shehagdi, why is Gedi an advantageous animal in this context? So we said because a Gedi is a kosher animal. The Aruch has a different take on it. He says that a Gedi is an animal hamisnagech im chaverov. You know, have you ever seen two goats that are intertwined? You know, their horns are... What are they called? Bang heads? Is that the phrase? So he says that goats, you know, they're involved in these, what's the word in fencing when you talk about a match or something?
A jousting or something?
Yeah, a match. Well, what's the word for a match? You know, a jousting match. You know, anyway, what's the word?
A duel.
A duel, okay. So as a result of this duel, the goats get tired. And that's why, if you want to describe the tiredness of the students after their study session, the word goat, a tired goat, that phrase is very appropriate. Why? Because what is the essence of learning Torah? It is called Milchamta Shel Torah. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Yeah.
Right? The Ramban wrote a whole work called Milchamta Shel Torah, Milchemes Hashem. There's a milchama that we're involved in. And therefore, if you get tired as a result, you're exhausted as a result of the Milchamta Shel Torah, That's not a negative thing. That's on the contrary, it's the natural and the goal perhaps of where you should be. You should be totally exhausted because you put in every ounce of energy. So when I see people in my shiur who are a little bit dozing off, I really think that they're probably just exhausted from learning Torah. Right? It's not that they sleep because they want to sleep. In any event, so that's the comparison of a goat. So Rav was very excited about the second Talmud. Now, by the way, I just want to point out, and this would require a lot of study, the personality of Rav. You know, there are various Amoraim that if we study the Shas, we get a little bit of a picture of their personality. We get an image of what they were like. And I think that amongst the most unique Amoraim, personality-wise, on the whole map, again, Rabbi Yochanan is very unique, and Reish Lakish was very unique, and Rabbi Shuman Levi was very unique. Again, the Gemara talks about all these Amoraim, Abaye and Rava. But perhaps the most unique of all Amoraim, don't quote me on this because I'll deny I said it, was Rav. The Gemara says about Rav that he never picked up his eyes. Could you imagine? No, because he was so modest that he never looked you directly in the eyes. There are a lot of extreme statements about Rav. He was not your normal Joe. You know, you didn't go up to Rav and pat him on the back and say, "How you doing, Rebbe, today? You know, today, you know, it's everyone's friendly with the Rebbe. You know, you give him a smack on the back and say, Rebbe, when are we going to go out to shoot a ball together and stuff like that?" Not with Rav. Rav was the holy of holies. He was in a whole different madrigal.
Did he have a profession?
That I don't know.
Because some of the tonight.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
Again, we'd have to spend a lot of time researching this and go through many agadotas about Rav and who Rav was. Rav was the epitome of modesty. Now, I'm just mentioning it here because it could be that Rav didn't even know who he was talking to. He never actually looked them in the eyes. He may not have even known their names. But he had ears. And he heard something that really bothered him. And he felt that this Talmud, who was comparing the weakness of the Talmidim, who were after exhausted, after a study session in Torah, was comparing them to a sleepy pig, he couldn't tolerate that. Because Rav lived on a very high madrigal. He was very, very sensitive to every word that he heard, more so than everyone else. Okay, just as a word of introduction to where we're going here, I'm hoping, believe me, that tomorrow we'll finish this sugya here on Daf Gimel Amid Beis and go on to the main sugya on Daf Dalet, which begins our discussion of Chametz on Erev Pesach. So my goal for tomorrow, Be'ezer Hashem, if you take a look on Daf Dalet, you'll see the two dots around 15 lines down from the top. The first word in the line that starts with Masechta Pesachim is Vahashta. And gentlemen, you'll tell me, my plan is to say this year even on Hanukkah, and we don't like Hanukkah this early in the morning, so I think we could reconcile it. But if you're not going to be here, please let me know. I know David is on a plane tonight.
I may not be here.
Okay, so we'll see. But I think the perfect time to learn Torah is Hanukkah time for many reasons, but that's my Ashkafa. And Belineta, tomorrow we're going to learn a very fascinating story about the Karpin Pesach, and that's what we'll pick up tomorrow. Okay, then. So I wish everyone a great day.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hello.
He's saying hello.
Hi. Tomorrow.
Okay, Yehuda. So I'll see you next week if you'll be free on Chanukah. Okay, then.